Quiet, please.
You're listening to Birdies and Bogeys, hosted by Jordan Bloxham and Weston Mon, bringing you golf's week in review, recapping your favorite tournaments with professional insight from their perspective. Now, quiet, please. Here's your hosts, Jordan and Weston.
Weston, how are you?
Good, good. Doing great.
Good. I'm doing good, too. Although I'm outside on the deck in Florida, and it's a little muggy. It's almost 1 o'clock in the morning here. The show's got to go on, as they say, right?
Of course.
For sure. So kind of a slower week, I guess you would say, in golf. But some pretty big, I guess, names won. So we'll go through the winners.
Yeah. Some good names, very reputable known names. So it's kind of a fun week.
Yeah. Tommy Fleetwood being the first that, I guess, since he was across the pond, he was the first win where he won in South Africa and defended his title and ended a 3-year win the strap.
Yeah.
And you go, well, how does that happen? Well, a little thing called COVID, and South Africa was obviously worried about that for 2 years.
They were like an epicenter for it.
Or something. Yeah.
Or something.
So, or something. We're just going to go with that at this point. But yeah, I think because Fleetwood has never won on the PGA Tour.
Nope.
Right? So maybe he found himself a home on the DP World Tour.
And that was things like, you know, there's a lot of hype around him. There's no doubt about it. I think there's more hype around his salad or his hair than his game. But they always say Tommy Fleetwood's a pure ball striker. Oh, he's so good. He's flush. People that see him in person are like so impressed by his swing and the contact that he makes. And yeah, but I mean, when you look at the stats and you look at the results, he lost his PGA Tour card last year.
Yeah.
And you only lose your tour card because you just don't play well enough to keep it. That's just the bottom line. So that's why he's out on the DP World Tour. And, you know, he's finding his form again and playing some good golf. But again, you know, what's the strength of field out there? Is this like an amazing victory? Well, probably not, because it's on the DP World Tour.
And it wasn't horrible. I mean, well, I take that back. It wasn't very good. He beat Ryan Fox. Ryan Fox has been a really good player on the DP World Tour this year. I think if he had won, he would have taken over the Order of Merit, the top spot in the Order of Merit for them, which would have given him the kind of the front runner to the race to Dubai thing. So he's been playing pretty good. So it's not like he beat nobody, but he kind of beat nobody.
Now, I mean, let's preface this. Yeah, we are comparing this against the PGA Tour, which is obviously the elite right now, or elite, most elite tour. And when we compare those in order of magnitude, the PGA Tour being the most difficult, and I would rank the Korn Ferry Tour as the second most difficult, with the DP Tour being very close, but not equivalent to. Because, I mean, if you consider what's actually happening, and the tours know this too, if you play on the Korn Ferry Tour and you're in the top 25, you get a tour card. If you're on the DP tour and you're in the top 10, you get a tour card. If you're 11th on the DP tour, you don't get a tour card on the PGA tour. So even they manage the expectations through that exemption model, and they put more merit in the Korn Ferry tour than they do the DP tour. So you can't be an equal. I'd have to rank it as, like, you know, first, second, second and a half, or third, if you will. So impressive victory nonetheless. It's better than the Asian tour, it's better than the Canadian tour, it's better than, you know, some of the mini tours out there, but that, you know, it is what it is. That's where the DP World Tour sits. So
yes, it's we've talked about this a little bit, but we feel that the Korn Ferry is probably, from top to bottom, is a more competitive tour than the DP tour at this point in time.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you do?
Oh. Just the nature of the beast. But still, I'm glad he's got a victory, and maybe this will springboard his confidence into playing better. And I know he still has some, like, sponsorship or playing exemptions into the PGA Tour. He'll take those when he can get them. But yeah, I mean, if this can be a springboard into some better play, like, all the better to him.
Yeah, I don't. Maybe this gets in some more sharp starts, but I mean, from this point, right, he just gotta continually play on the DP World Tour to build back up that world ranking where it needs to be.
I imagine a victory should put him in the top 25 there, and with enough finishes, he could sneak into that top 10 and get a tour card back. So
this is possible, you're right. But so I wonder how they do it. Is the top 10 that don't already have tour cards? Because I mean, if we look at the DP World Tour, let's see if we can pull it up and see if we can get there. I was gonna see all standings right there, pulling it up on my phone. Oh, it wouldn't let it refresh. No, there we go. So yeah, so right now on there, it moved him up to fourth. But of the top 10 right now, Shane Lowry, Thomas Peters, Will Zalatoris, Victor Hovland, Matt Fitzpatrick, and Rory McIlroy are new members of the PGA Tour. I mean, that's telling you something. So you've got guys that do not play a full slate on the PGA Tour or on the DP World Tour.
Yeah.
And I just named, what, six guys? Seven guys of the top 10? Yeah, I think seven of the top 10 are already for PGA Tour players.
Yeah.
So it just tells you how it's skewed. Especially towards majors and everything. But, you know, that may get him back into that. Maybe onto the PGA Tour, because he'll be top 10. There you go. He found his way back.
Which,
I mean, is also a detriment to the DP World Tour, right?
As soon as
they get a chance, they're like, I'm out.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, it's a feeder tour. And, like, if I was 20 again, and I would really go for the European tour right now. Like, that just sounds so enticing. Now I'm an old man and have no future in golf. But, man, I had so much in front of me at 20. I wonder what could have been if I just lived in a VW bus in Europe and just drove around playing at tour events. Well, the reality was back then, like the European Tour was no slouch. Like there were like solid heavy hitters back in 2000, where it was like Lee Westwood and Ian Poulter and Colin Montgomery, even like guys that were just solid threats.
Yeah, for sure. But it is what it is. And who knows? Like I said, a total landscape of golf could change over the next two years. Well, it will change. It'll just be, it's unknown how it will change. But yeah. And then on the ladies tour, Nelly Korda gets a win to retake world number one. I guess I didn't watch any of it. I don't think I watched much golf at all this week again. But I guess she had a kind of an emotional energy after about how difficult her year has been. And I was like, well, you're back to number one. It couldn't have been that hard. I mean, there's some things. I mean, she's went through some injuries and some different things. So it's been trying for sure. But when you end the year at world number one, it couldn't have been like a terrible year. But that's just
yeah. Couldn't have been that bad.
Nope. And then the final, and for the big boy tour, the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
Our boy, Tony Finau, gets win number 5 for his career and 3 in his last 7 starts.
Oof.
Which is pretty crazy. Like I said, you've got on here that it was a lackluster field, which it wasn't like a whole bunch of heavy hitters. There were some good players. I think wasn't Scheffler playing. I think there was a couple of guys that were playing. But at the same time, he absolutely dominated them.
Oh, it was like, I mean, I'm not going to go overboard and say it was like watching Tiger, but anytime anybody gets an 8-stroke lead over an entire field of PGA Tour, that's like almost 2 rounds of golf, right? Like,
right.
For an average. So that's pretty impressive that out of 3 days of golf, you are able to gain a 2-round of golf advantage over the field. And then, you know, he just walked in essentially. Like, you can earn a gingerly stroll down the fairway when you've garnered an 8-stroke lead over the field. There's no need to shoot another 65. You just, hey, I'm just going to play smart golf, make my pars, walk away with almost $2 million. How about that?
Oh yeah. he did good work. Like I said, he did his work in the first 3 rounds and didn't have to do much other than that. So
no, nope, not just,
all you can do is what you can do. So but yeah, like I said, he's finally, I think, kind of got that killer instinct. Like
yeah.
Like the whole I'm better than you. I know I'm better than you. And I'm going to show that I'm better than you.
And he really is. And I think this will probably catapult him into like a top 10 player in the world. Where does he sit?
No, he was top 10 prior to this, wasn't he? Already fallen out. I think he was top 10 after his last 2 wins.
Yeah.
So I think this may get it close to like the top 5.
He's 12th right now. He was 15th. So
wow, I thought he was inside the top 10.
Yeah. He might have jumped higher had the field been stronger. And that just shows you win on the PGA Tour with a weak field and you jump 3 spots. to some guys that weren't even playing that week. So, I mean, consider that.
Yeah, so then it's not, not a great field, but except a win is a win.
Yeah, win nonetheless. And, I mean, for Tony, rack him up. And I think we're really going to see him. Like, I see this guy as a potential 10-plus winner on tour and probably a major in there. He's come close a few times, but I think this killer instinct of closing out a victory will help him do what he needed to do on some of those final days on those majors. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, he's a Utah guy, and I'm totally biased, but I think he's got a lot more to offer.
Yes, like I said, and he finally kind of has that that it, right?
Yeah.
Because before, I think was like, I think there was a lot of, obviously he was a great player, but he kind of had that, I'm a good player, but it's really nice to be here type
thing.
And I think with his second of his back-to-backs, I think it was a really good kind of like a second of it's where he just said, I didn't like how I finished in the first one, even though I won, and kind of took that to heart. And
And he's in a position, I mean, he has been for a while, but, and his motto is get 1% better every time. And so he's really working on aspects of his game and elevating that. And I could definitely say with a surety that on the first 3 days of this tournament, he was firing on all cylinders. And the fourth day, it wasn't, he wasn't playing golf the same way he did on the first 3 days. But, we definitely got to see a time where everything really was put together. So pretty cool to see how he's been able to improve his game and get it to a place where he's a dominant force. So
crazy. So that's good. And we'll take a look at in a little bit his tools of his trade and what got him to win here. But let's go over some other golf news. A few things. Sorry, we just said it wasn't a huge news week, but LIV did come out and announce its first official event of 2023, and they're going to Adelaide, Australia, they've got the Australian Open and Australian Masters, but it doesn't draw a huge field. So the fact that they're putting this back on the map is a really good thing for sure.
Yeah. And it is really cool to see this happen. In fact, the LIV Golf actually had to do some logistics because they ran out of space in the tournament. It actually filled up so quick from a spectator perspective that they had to try and re, I don't know what they did, but they had to expand.
They added more tickets
when you do something like that, you have to change the logistics of a tournament, right? You've got to offer more and do more. And so I think they went around and figured out what they needed to do to allow more people because they ran out. And so that's really cool to hear. Now, I mean, I think people that listen know, we are open to the LIV Golf, and we think it's another avenue for golf entertainment. and we're supportive of that. But it's pretty cool to see that happen out there in a different country that, you know, in some regards might be golf deprived. And so when you get something like this with some pretty heavy hitters from an Australian perspective, with Cam Smith being a top player in the world and Greg Norman with his heritage, I could see why this one is so successful.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like I said, it's going to a place that is like starved for golf. So I think the viewership and everything will be good for this one. Like I said, they need to finish up and try to finalize their TV deal here in the States. But I think they'll have that wrapped up by then. So,
yeah.
But yeah, and then another live related news. Rory's at it again.
Rory.
He needs to stop. Like, I read enough. Like when I pull it up and you pull up the article, whatever it is, like this one I think was through Golf.WRX or whatever. When I used to pull him up, he's like, oh yeah, Rory's got a good point. Now it's just like 90% of it is Rory just needs to shut up. But I think it's just because he keeps like going back and forth on what he says, right?
It's bad. He's waffling. It's just what's happening. He'll say, oh, it's gotta go, and we can't have this, and it's not golf or whatever. And then it's like, we gotta find a middle ground and come together. And then it's like, it's gotta go away. And then he's like, it's funny because he's calling Greg out, acting like he's this guy that his ego is too big for this world and he's got to take a hike. But like, is he ignoring Jay Monahan and all of this? Like, because his ego is too big for the whole world. He's got to go.
Well, and I think that's the thing, right? He's like, well, yeah, we need to come to the table, but Greg Norman's not going to allow that to happen. I'm like, Rory, I don't know what kind of bubble you're living in, but I'm pretty sure that Greg Norman is the only one that has extended his hand and said, we're still willing to come to the table.
Exactly.
Or that's... Jay Monahan in the PGA Tour is the one that's like, we'll never work with these guys.
Exactly. Never.
So, like I said, that's it. Like I said, Rory just needs to not, right? He can have his opinion, but his opinion's wrong. Like, Greg's done really good things. Like I said, he may have not handled it perfectly, but like I said, he's the only one that's extended his hand to try to get together. So
that's true.
That's it.
No, and then, that's the bottom line.
And in kind of similarly related news, because it does all boil down to what the Live Tour has done, PGA Tour U is extending more access to the PGA Tour through its things. And I was just reading it, and it's a lot, but they're doing this because they don't want their young talent to go to Live.
Yeah.
Right. Plain and simple. And then, which is funny because this one came from the Fire Pit Collective, but Matthew Fitzpatrick's little brother, what is his name, got an exemption
Yeah.
I'm drawing a blank on his name.
It's like Max or something, but.
Yeah. But he got an exemption into the final stage of Corn Ferry Q School without even signing up.
Yeah, that's a little shady.
But when they were going through and I read the Fire Pig Collective's like write up on it.
Yeah.
And it was basically like, well, yeah, they did this and you can see the reasons why, because they like the PGA Tour mishandled how they gave points out for the Merido tournament. One of the bigger tournaments, because it was like COVID.
Oh my gosh. Stuff. Of course.
They also said he didn't sign up, right? He didn't even sign up.
You and know,
the place that he was in, he would have only got to second stage, not to final stage.
Yeah.
And he ended up 94th, which was not exempt. Right, but he does have some status, right? It's conditional status, but yeah. You know that'll get him. That will get him some starts through sponsors exemptions, and if he plays well, it will allow him to end up with like jumping that shuffle like big time. Right.
Oh yeah.
If he makes a cut, then he'll get in way more. So they were pulling some strings for a young player who also happens to have an older brother who's one of the top players on the PGA Tour.
Surprise, surprise.
The bigger keep, right, is it's like, okay, if we can keep little brother on the tour, guess what won't happen to older brother?
Exactly. Because I'm sure once Greg said, hey, we got seven more, I'm sure that really sparked a lot of players' interests.
Yeah. And like I said, and I think if little brother Fitzpatrick would have went, it would have been a package deal. Just the same way the Koepka, the brothers Koepka.
The brothers Koepka.
So, but like I said, all the tour has done has got professional golfers paid more.
It really has. I mean, if you really think about the grand scheme of thing, it's funny. Guys that carried some weight, like a Phil Mickelson or DJ or Brooks Koepka, they got more money just by leaving, thus opening up more spots and opportunities for new players on the PGA Tour to actually play in those events and earn more money.
Yeah.
And then for the PGA Tour to keep players on their tour, they had to put more money in. And you've even seen the articles like, oh, the DP World Tour found $150 million extra that they can put into the tour winnings. And so they just find this money and it just gets put into the tour so that the players can earn more. And totally makes sense what they're doing. They're going after the young talent. Why? Because they're the future, and that's why the NFL holds a draft day and they pull these players right out of college and they give them multi-million dollar contracts when they're worth it. And guess what? Liv did that, and now you've got so much more getting offered to the PGA Tour or through the PGA Tour to the college, to where those players have an opportunity to get a tour card before they even finish college. And it's so interesting how things have changed. And we're not talking about, oh, this has been a very long haul over a decade of reform. This happened in the last 12 months. Yeah. All of it.
That's like 6 months.
Like six months. It's 6 months, so much change. And it's all gotten better for the players, right?
Yeah.
And you can say what you want about the LIV guys, but the results are now there and people are making more money. I mean, Tony Finau made $1.5 million and change on his victory in, Houston. I don't know, a second-rate tour event. I mean, let's be real. It's not like Bay Hill or Muirfield with Jack's tournament, or like Torrey Pines or something. So there are some A-list tournaments and B-list tournaments. This kind of falls in that B-list category, but $1.5 million, like, that's a huge check right there for a tournament. And yeah, things have escalated for sure, and it's all been for the better. We just have a lot of turmoil going on. So
yeah, like I said, over the next 2 years, it'll shake itself out.
Yeah.
And either way, there's going to still be more money in golf, right?
Yeah.
Because it's whatever way it goes, you're not going to just pull that money out.
Yeah. And it just shows that, what happens. I'm kind of a proponent of the free market. When you let other competition come in and create a product, it creates competition. It creates lower cost of entry, maybe more innovation, a better product, or in this case, more winnings for those people that are providing the entertainment. And so I really like what's happened with the free market approach. And I think that, before the PGA Tour had a monopoly, and they lived life very good for not just like decades, but like half a century. Yeah. Even longer. I mean, ever since they kind of broke off in the 50s and 60s until now, that's like 80 years of just unrivaled business. And so that's pretty insane to see that. And it's been really good for a long time, but now it's getting better.
Yep. It's getting better. It'll get better. Now let's do some equipment.
Oh, talk. Yeah.
Oh, it was a Triple T weekend, as you noted this week. Triple T weekend.
Yeah, Mr. T, he loved this weekend. So, huge shout out to the Vokey team for getting the right wedge in the right guy's hands. And bottom line is the Vokey T grind was in the bag for three winners this week for Tony Finau, Tommy Fleetwood, and Miss Nelly Korda. So, yeah. I've never seen that happen before, where the same wedge grind in the 60 degree across three different tours won.
It's like that. You said it's a good wedge. I'm down here in Florida. I'm probably with the course that we're playing, because Tropical Storm Nicole rolled through and it is wet.
Yeah.
A low bounce K would be a pretty good option. Actually, yeah. The wedge that you're testing right now, your old wedge would actually be a pretty good one, because it doesn't, I don't know, it might be too sharp for it, but the low bounce K would be pretty good for it.
I actually, because I have played on Bermuda in Florida once, and I have never had a grass grab my wedge so fiercely than the Bermuda in Florida. Like, it is like a catcher's mitt just grabbing a wedge. And after that experience, next time I play Bermuda, I am bringing a very high bounce 60 degree. And I'd probably enjoy playing like my TaylorMade TW 11 degree, which has just a super generous sole. And I think that would do wonderfully, because I did play the T grind down in Florida and it was like, no love for you.
You have to change so much, right?
You have
to you have to be very conscious and expose that bounce, which can get tricky. But if you get something with a little bit more bounce, you can be a little bit more aggressive because it's not going to dig. You have to be aggressive with your contact with your stroke through it. So
if I had to pick a Voki, I'd probably get like the high bounce K, or even if I wanted a little bit tighter wedge, and I'd probably get like the M grind, a 6008 M, where it's got a decent size sole but a little bit more bounce. But yeah, I'm a bent grass guy, so I'll just stick to bent grass.
Bermuda's definitely a different beast. But I mean, another option would be the Cam Smith route, where you go with the S grind.
Yeah, the 10S. That's a great wedge for that. And that's what they play out in Hawaii. And I can't remember the breed of grass, but it's something similar to Bermuda. Kikuya.
Kikuya, I think, is what they do a lot there. So.
And the only reason I know Kikuya, actually, there was a country club in Northern California, Richmond Country Club, where Cal plays sometimes. My buddy was, his dad was the GM there. So we got to go out and play every once in a while. And I learned that Kikuya will screw you.
Yeah.
Because it's a grabby grass too. And so watch out for that.
It's similar. But yeah, let's get into Tony's. Like I said, he's won 3 of his last 7 starts. So I don't think there's a ton that's new. And we've obviously talked about his wedge deep, right?
Yeah. We'll kind of dig into a couple of things around the equipment that I think should be known, because there's some cool stuff with Ping. I think some of the highlights here for Tony, the 3-wood is not a Ping. It is a Callaway Rogue ST triple diamond, 14 degree.
It says a triple diamond T. So one of my buddies who's down here playing actually has the triple diamond S in this.
Oh.
It is way different. The shape is completely different. Way more camber in the sole.
Yeah.
And it's probably very similar. It looks like an old, I don't know if you've seen, so it's a little bit more like this of current models, like the shirts on, where it's got a little bit more rounded sole, right? More camber to that sole. But it's, if you're looking at it, you know, very like old school Tideless, just with them, a little bit more roundness to the sole. And it's like, I hit it on the range today, 5-wood, and I was like, oh, that's nice.
That is pretty cool. And I've seen that, and they actually Callaway kind of made a change about 3 years ago. They really started to offer a ton of tour offerings in the fairway woods, like more so than any other company out there, to where it's like, no, that's tour only. And there's like 6 or 7 different models that these tour players are running around with. But around that time, they really listened to Phil to put together the sole design. And so I do say he was quite instrumental in the sole designs of these fairway woods. So
I don't think his bag's in his room. He's actually, we're in the same Airbnb. But I'll take a picture of it tomorrow and send it to you. It's a beaut, Clark. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
It's definitely different enough. Like, it would be one that I'd be like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Because even off like hard pan, it's still a very good fairway.
Yeah.
Out of the rough. Yeah. really good fairway with. Like it's very versatile, that the soul of that
one. Yeah, so. And I played a Titleist 980F fairway wood for a really long time, and that's essentially the same sole design, because Phil designed that one too. It is like so rounded, upside down rainbow. You could like pick stuff. You could have a ball sitting between two rocks and pick it right out, no problem.
Like yeah, it's very that, and it's nice.
Yeah. Other stuff. Quite possibly the oldest club on tour at the moment, his 3-iron, the Nike Vaporfly Pro 3-iron, the black one with the blue logo and paint in the in the inside of the cavity. This thing is not going to leave his bag. He is unearthly long. Yeah, I know. It'll only leave if it breaks, but he's so long, he doesn't need a 5-wood or a hybrid. Like this 3-iron he hits probably goes like 280. No problem.
Yeah. Oh, so, yeah, for sure.
Wicked long, but he's got the Ping Blueprint irons in his bag, and I think these are the longest he's played a particular model in his career. He's had these blueprints for a while, but one of the cool design highlights to this iron that was actually shown a little bit more in the new i230s as they did some pull aparts. The blueprint is actually counterbalanced on the toe and inside the hosel, and these are interchangeable weights. So usually club builders are very particular, and they're very they look down on people that would use a tip weight because the components maybe don't match up, and how could you use tip weights, and that's just a shame or whatever. Well the way Ping is utilizing this is they want to achieve a certain swing weight. So they get two weights that are equal to each other, and they place them in the iron so that they're not changing potential CG location, even though it would move quite minimally. But it's a very balanced approach. And so you're adding weight to the opposite ends of this iron, creating more moment of inertia. So a more stable iron. And so these Ping blueprints are very well balanced because the toe weight is being worked with as the hosel weight is also being utilized. And so you've got the tip weight in the shaft and the toe weight counteracting each other, and just bringing the total weight up or the total weight down of the iron, depending on how you need to configure it for your custom build. So there is a lot of science in that blade. So, you know, if you're looking for a player's club, one of the smaller looking blades out there, definitely give a look out to those because they've got some cool technology in them.
Yeah, I actually have a set. Actually, yeah. And they're not bad. Like I said, I need to get swinging a little bit better so I could maybe put them back into play, but weakening them a little bit takes some of that offset off. But yeah, then I think, like I said, you go through same thing, right? He's got the new Glide 4.0s in there. That may be new since his last one, but it may not, just because they didn't come out too long ago.
Yeah.
And then his trusty T-grind, right? So that let him kind of get away with three non-ping clubs in the bag.
I think that's the limit.
It depends, because he used to not. Well, he had a specially written thing in there until he actually switched to the PLD putter, the PLD prototype, that he could play his Bednar in using or something that was like the same model, maybe newer in that Bednar.
Yeah.
If he ever was going to switch, it had to be away from that Bednardi. It had to be into Ping. So they got him into that. So that maybe gives him a little bit more leeway, which is why he was able to switch out the fairway wood.
True. And the T-grind, I mean, we talk about it a ton, but what a great wedge for Texas. A little bit drier, probably firmer ground, and you've got a nice wedge that will sit low. It's a it's a big time favorite of the Open Championship and any other place where you've got tight lies. And yeah. So it's just a fantastic and versatile wedge. And I tell you what, it is the best wedge for hard packed windswept bunkers. Like, you know, the ones you just walk in, you're like, this is clay. That's what you want a tee grind for. And it's awesome. So definitely do that if you've got some mediocre bunkers. If you're on the white fluffy stuff, don't even dare. Just walk away.
Well, you may have that tee grind, but it will not be utilized out of the bunker.
No. Grab your 56 and use that. But no, super cool wedge. If you ever get a chance to go down to like the Titleist TPI fitting, they do wedge fittings there. You could easily get fit into some killer Vokey wedges that will fit you perfectly. And maybe the tee will be for you, or maybe not. So,
but he does play the left dot, which is not, there's not a lot of people out there playing the Pro V1 left dot.
I think it's more spin.
I think the left dot is more spin. I think you're right.
Yeah. So, and just from a flight perspective, Tony is, he's got a lot of speed. So he wants a ball that flies a little bit lower. And through the models of Pro V1, the Pro V1X does fly higher. But the Pro V1 flies a little bit lower. But when you got these dot and dash variations, he wanted a ball that flew a little bit lower, but also gave him a little bit more spin. And that's where the Pro V1 sits. So not a bad ball.
And then UTX midsize in the green.
Yep.
For usual.
Yeah, and something to note about his putter, and I pulled this image up, so if you get a chance to check out Golf WRX, they actually have really good current pictures of his bag, and they took a picture of the sole of his putter. So his putter is a black oxide carbon putter, and that sole is just getting worn off because it's just used so much, and it's pretty cool to see this, but there's more wear on the heel side. So Tony, you know, he may get his putter pretty close to horizontal, but it's definitely more used on the heel, as the wear marks would showcase. So he's got a little toe up, and that's okay. You just find the putter that fits you and goes in the hole the most, whether it's toe up or toe down or flat or forward or whatever. You just got to get fit. So
yeah, just got to find the right one for you. And he's rolling it.
He's rolling right now, it good. So. Yeah. Yeah, he made some bombs. So good.
Yeah. But I think that's it. And that's all we got for this week. And I want to go to bed. So
yeah. All right, folks. That's it.
We're gonna be like, all right. Yeah, that's it. Hey, everybody, thanks for listening and putting up with us. But you definitely will enjoy our info always. But until next time, we are out.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Birdies and Bogeys. If you enjoyed what you heard, please subscribe, leave us a rating and review, and until next time, have a great week.